Welcome to OnClive On Air. I'm your host today, Ashlyn Wehner. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with David R. Gandara, MD, about biomarker testing in lung cancer. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Gandara discussed the optimal use of liquid biopsy for patients with non-small cell lung cancer, the ins and outs of testing for KRAS mutations, and available treatment options for patients with KRAS mutant non-small cell lung cancer. How, when do you use liquid biopsy for patients with non-small cell lung cancer?
Well, thanks for the question. I think the first thing to say is that molecular testing itself is now being used for almost the entire, what we call the cancer care continuum, from early stage disease to advanced stage four disease with acquired resistance from oncogene. So that's a huge area. It's not yet standard of care in screening normal individuals like it is now, for instance, in colorectal cancer. But that being said, liquid biopsy is the only way that you could use molecular testing for screening because there's no tissue. The patient doesn't have a diagnosis yet. And the same thing is true for what we call minimal residual disease in an early stage patient after surgery. All the other aspects pretty much can be done either in tissue or in liquid biopsy. Tissue has always been the gold standard, but now liquid biopsy is becoming preferred in several areas, such as in acquired resistance. We published a paper that is a consensus statement from the International Association for Study of Lung Cancer. And for the first time, we actually proposed get both tissue testing and liquid biopsy at the time of diagnosis because they are highly complementary.
What is the utility of liquid biopsy at the time of disease progression?
Well, this is the most common use of liquid biopsy for lung cancer. In non-small cell lung cancer, we now test for 9 oncogenes at the time of diagnosis of an advanced stage patient. If a patient has an oncogene-driven cancer, such as EGFR or ALK, and they're treated with a standard of care tyrosine kinase inhibitor for those diseases, at the time of progressive disease, it's very useful to first go to liquid biopsy to see if you can determine the mechanism, because it's faster and very accurate by comparison to tissue biopsy. With tissue biopsy, you have what's called tissue heterogeneity. You don't see that with liquid biopsy because it's global. It reflects all the DNA in your blood. And you look for one of two things. You look for what would be called on-target resistance, that is a secondary mutation in that pathway, so a secondary resistance EGFR or ALK mutation, for example, or in contrast, what's called a bypass mechanism. That could be resistance due to MET amplification or an acquired bypass mutation. For example, HER2 or BRAF. If you find one of those things, it lets you know what direction you should go for treatment. For example, we now have several MET inhibitors, both TKIs and the IV drug amivantamab, which are very effective in treating MET amplification as an acquired resistance mechanism. On the other hand, if it's a resistance mutation, for example, for ALK, we have several new generation drugs. Lorlatinib is an example, which are highly effective in those resistance mutations. So the bottom line is that it's useful to look compared to just picking your next therapy empirically, and also that you can avoid, for example, chemotherapy in many cases because you have a good alternative.
And so then moving on to KRAS mutations in particular, when should patients with non-small cell lung cancer be tested for these mutations, and how is this testing done?
Well, I think this is a common misunderstanding by some oncologists in that KRAS mutations, there are a large number of them, and they're like apples and oranges compared to each other. For example, KRAS G12C is a highly tobacco carcinogen-related mutation. It creates neoantigens, and that makes those patients very sensitive to checkpoint immunotherapy. On the other hand, there are some other KRAS mutations which are quite common, which actually occur in people who never smoked. Those KRAS mutations do not predispose that patient to response from immunotherapy. And we don't right now have any specific drugs for them, although they're under development. So that's the first thing to know, is you can't throw all the KRAS mutations into one bundle. You have to think about them individually. If your patient has a KRAS G12C, for example, as I said, it has implications for immunotherapy, and then later on for selective KRAS G12C inhibitors. So we test for KRAS upfront at the time of diagnosis in patients with stage 4 non-small cell lung cancer. Almost all of those KRAS mutations will be in what we call adenocarcinoma. KRAS is easy to find. In other words, it's not a mutation which is difficult to pick up in either tissue or plasma. And there are only a few of what I would call false positives in liquid biopsy. These are usually very low level. We call it a low VAF. And they're what is referred to as clonal hematopoiesis. So the liquid biopsy is actually picking up a mutation which is present in the patient's normal white blood cells. Today, in 2024, usually filtering algorithms in the liquid biopsy next generation sequencing will filter those out and they will not even be reported. Other times, the report will say, oh, this is a variant of unknown significance. In other words, it's not something to worry about. So those are the caveats.
What are some of the available frontline treatment options for patients with KRAS mutations, and how do you kind of decide between these?
Right. So first, again, it depends on what KRAS mutation it is. If it is a KRAS G12C mutation, then those are some of the people that have the very best response to checkpoint immunotherapy, with or without chemotherapy added. So that's a good prognostic factor for treatment. But overall, it's a bad prognostic factor. In the absence of immunotherapy, those patients in the past didn't do well. So that's in the first line. In the second line, we now have two FDA-approved selective inhibitors of KRAS G12C, sotorasib and adagrasib, and they are the go-to therapy in the second line.
What are some of the adverse effects that are associated with these therapies, and how are these effects typically managed?
The toxicities are relatively similar between the two drugs that are available, primarily GI toxicity like diarrhea or nausea. And usually these are what we would call grade 1 or 2. They're not severe. And if need be, dose interruption or a dose reduction can be given. Sometimes patients do complain of fatigue, and there are some more unusual side effects, for instance, liver function abnormalities, but the drugs are relatively well tolerated. One of my disclosures is that I am the chief medical officer for a relatively new society, the International Society of Liquid Biopsy, ISLB. It's 5 years old. It is growing very fast because there are so many applications of liquid biopsy, not only in lung cancer, which we just talked about, but in many other types of cancer. I just mentioned now a new screening liquid biopsy for colorectal cancer just reported in the New England Journal. We're having our annual Congress in November this year, If anyone listening to this is interested, you can find us on islb.info, and we would love to have you participate with us or join our society. Thank you.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.